The time going on for 25 minutes to 9 on your favourite Catholic radio station, Radio Veritas. And now it's my pleasure and privilege to speak to an old friend of mine whom I knew years and years ago when he was starting off in life, going to university, becoming a well-known and a very famous man, Peter Sadie. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Father Emil. How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you, but very, very sad at the sudden death of our good friend Chris Langeveldt.
Yes.
I'm sure that you at Imsimbi must be shattered by this.
Yes, we are. Yeah. But we also know that we were all blessed to know an angel.
Yes.
And that for the time that he walked with us, right, we are really thankful to God for the gift of our brother Chris.
All right. Okay, Peter, look, let's talk to you about him because, I mean, you worked very closely. Give us a little bit of a rundown of his life because, I mean, he was somebody very well known to many people and taught many priests, in fact, as well.
Correct. I'd like to start off with his birth in 1951,
right,
where he was born into a Dutch immigrant family who had settled in South Africa shortly after World War II.
Right.
And they lived in Robertsham. And as you know, from that period of South Africa's history, the big conflict was between English and Afrikaners. And he somehow was teased a lot as a kaaskop because of his Dutch origin.
Yes.
And then he went to La Rochelle Convent as a little boy, and later on at high school, he was at St. Benedict. And one of the things that stuck with Chris from his childhood was he really took a strong stand against bullying. He always identified with people who were weaker, the underdog, and that became very important later on in his development politically.
Yeah.
While he was at school, he felt a calling, and actually he felt a calling to be a brother. But he was persuaded through a period of discernment to become a priest of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate.
Right.
And studied in Rome at the Gregorian University, and was invited to stay on because he was doing so well in his studies.
Right.
That a highly intelligent person was Chris. But he loved South Africa, and he was very keen to return. And he came and lectured at Sodara, you know, from the 70s into the 80s, especially in theology. And, you know, one of the things about Chris is he loved reading.
Yeah.
Right up until the end, he was still learning. He was somebody who really believed in lifelong learning.
Yes.
He never wanted to stop learning.
Sure. And somebody told me he spoke several languages.
Yes. In fact, he as a priest, he studied, he spent a period of time in Lesotho and lived really amongst poor people in Lesotho where he learned to speak Lesotho fluently.
Wow.
And then that really helped him a lot when he got his first posting in Piri, in Soweto. And if you know Piri, it's a poor part of Soweto.
Right.
And through the 80s, when the struggle was at its peak and things were really tough, he was highly committed to building small Christian communities in his parish. And he also gave sanctuary to people who were on the run from the police at the time. When many people were afraid to bury some of the comrades who had been killed, he was always at the funeral. And I think the key thing that people misunderstand about Chris, he was first and foremost a Christian. That was his name. And he saw Jesus in the face of the poor.
Right.
So for him, it was quite a natural thing to take an option for and with the poor.
Right.
And he was committed to serving the poor throughout his life.
Right. And so he spoke Sesotho, you say, but did he not speak any other languages?
A little bit of Zulu as well, but
right,
he was more fluent in Sesotho.
Yeah.
He also later on was chaplain to the YCS and the YCW,
right,
and he had a great belief in the Sea Judge Act method because it integrated life with faith.
Right.
And he really felt that was a key part of what it meant to be a Christian in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
If we needed to find out what did the challenges we faced in our lives, what did our faith have to say about that? Right. And how could we actually act on our faith in a much more integrated way?
Right, yes. So, all right, so he spoke Sotho very well, you said. And I'm sure he also spoke Italian if he was studying in Italy.
Yes, he did speak Italian, you're right.
Yes, I suppose.
He actually was very good with languages, Chris. And, of course, his mother tongue of Dutch, he spoke fluently.
Yes.
But the another important part of his life was the writing of the Kairos document with people like Albert Nolan and Frank Ciccani and many others.
Yes.
And that was a kind of turning point in South Africa in the mid-80s, where it was a call to the church, really, to take sides with the poor. Right. In our country. And I think the Kairos document definitely helped a lot of us to see clearly what was going on and why we needed to take sides in that struggle.
And did he have a hand in the Kairos document, you think?
Yes, you know, he definitely. He was part of one of the authors of the Kairos document.
Okay.
With the collective, you know, through the Institute of Contextual Theology at the time.
Right.
So the next phase of his life, Emil, I think is actually very important too, because it shows some of the tensions and the contradictions that we face as human beings. And one thing about Chris, he was a very human person.
Right.
Now, he was surprised by love when his mom was actually very sick, and one of the parishioners at Robertsham, Barbara, was looking after his mom, and he felt he was really in love with Barbara. And it was not an easy choice for him as a priest. I want to emphasize that. And he went to the U.S. to discern what was God calling him to be.
Yeah.
And while he was away during a two-year period, actually, Barbara and her husband were divorced. And Chris knew in his heart that he needed to be married to Barbara.
Right.
And happier couple I have yet to meet. Right. You know, they loved each other, and every day was a gift. For them,
yeah.
Because they cared so much for each other. And I must say, we really, as much as we're going to miss Chris, I know Barbara and her family are going to miss Chris very deeply.
Right.
Because although he wasn't accepted initially by Barbara's children,
right.
They grew to love him.
Right.
And he quietly cared for each of them. I think Bruce, her son, the resident psychologist here.
Oh, I see. Yes.
But I must say, Chris had a special love for Joshua,
right.
Nikki's son. And he experienced the joy of fatherhood, even though he was Joshua's uncle.
Yeah.
He really loved Joshua and brought him up from being a little baby,
yeah.
Up until he is today a strong young man at 16.
Okay, all right. So he went to the States for a couple of years. Eventually, he married Barbara, and then what did he do?
So later on, after he got married, I mean, it's a very tough thing as a priest,
yeah.
If you leave your order,
yeah.
You have nothing, and that was in his mid-40s.
Yeah.
And he started off working in the Department of Land Affairs, assisting in the redistribution of land claims,
yeah.
And then he worked also for a while in another organization, legal-wise, and then 11 years ago, we started Msimbi, and he was one of the founding directors of Msimbi, where we helped train people in their skill development that will help them to grow in their career. But the thing about Chris, he remained a priest for me, because in all the training he did with people, he always taught people to reflect on their lives, to reflect on their experience, to discover what their faith was calling them to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just as an example, he trained a group of people in Andrina at the beginning of the year, and a number of them could not pass their assignment because their literacy skills were so weak. So he went back to Andrina last week because he wanted to help them to pass.
Right.
He just loved helping people, Chris. He couldn't help himself. Obviously, yeah. He was one of the few people she knows who on a Monday morning just looked forward to going to work because he loved the work he was doing so much.
Mm. I didn't realize he was one of the founding members of Msimbi.
Yes, yes, definitely. He was there right at the beginning in 2006.
Wow.
Well, of course, all of us were ex-YCS members, and we had all known Chris since we were in our youth. And
that's
that
was right.
Another joy, you know, that he was our priest, and then he was our partner, and definitely was the father of Msimbi, actually.
Okay.
A lot of the staff are heartbroken, are so sad when we shared the news with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing I would say about Chris, which I think people need to know, is that in his heart, I think he remained a Catholic. It was a painful thing for him that he couldn't continue his ministry after he got married.
Right.
But he was welcomed into the Anglican community where he preached regularly.
Yeah.
And let me say one thing. Chris had a gift of preaching.
Yeah.
He preached at St. Michael's in Welterfeldenpark, and he'll be buried from that church on Friday at 10 o'clock, this coming Friday.
Right.
And you know, for me, it's a gift that he was able to continue his ministry, because he certainly was called by God, and he needed to continue his service to God.
Mm.
And he wasn't able to do that as a Catholic. I'm so happy that he was able to do it as an Anglican.
Yes. And
for me, he'll always be a priest.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because he served people with a joy similar to St. Francis. He just loved people.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing, he was never laicized. Although he applied when he got married to be laicized, many who had left the priesthood after him were laicized, but his application was never passed. And for me, that's symbolic that he remained a priest.
Okay, so even though he applied, he was never laicized.
He was never laicized.
Mm.
He tried repeatedly, but it never went through.
I wonder why. That's very interesting. Very interesting, yes.
I think God wanted him to remain a priest. That's my
belief. There you go. All right, now listen, so his passing last Friday was very sudden. Did you have any inkling that he was sick?
No, not at all. I'm not sure exactly of the details, but it sounds like it was a clot, and it caused an embolism.
Yeah.
Barbara was at home with him on Thursday evening, in fact, and, you know, they were just relaxing and enjoying each other's company, and, you know, suddenly he fell back, and she said, although they gave him mouth-to-mouth, she felt that he had died at that moment when... The clot probably reached the brain.
Right.
Yeah. And he had an embolism.
Oh, wow, goodness. And do you feel he was ready for that moment?
Oh, definitely. Look,
yeah.
I must say, from Barbara and Chris's side, I feel very sad, because it's such a... You'll never... It's impossible to fill the gap of somebody like Chris in your life.
Yeah.
He's a one-of-a-kind person. You know, you can't replace in any kind of way.
That's right.
But Barbara did say the joy of being married to Chris for 19 years was a wonderful gift, and she really enjoyed every day with him.
Right.
And he did too. He really enjoyed that time. And I think he was certainly ready to be reunited with God. And that's the reality. We're all going home one day.
Yes.
And God just chose to bring Chris home a little bit earlier. The sad part, he was going to retire at the end of this year.
Oh, shame.
And it would have been lovely for him and Barbara to have had some time.
Right.
To travel the country and to have the space to really relax together.
Tell me, Peter, does this leave Imsembe in tatters now, or do you think he left things in good order?
No. Chris was the kind of person who focused on empowering the people around him.
Right.
And I must say, you know, of course, there will be a gap, but he was in the process of passing on his skills to younger people in the company.
Right.
And he was responsible, actually, for writing all the material, because his love of reading meant that he was highly, educated, as well as able to link up the challenges that people in the workplace today are facing with what the latest understanding in emotional intelligence, in all kinds of areas.
Yes.
That he contributed to. So now I think, of course, the staff are very sad, and we wouldn't want to in any way not recognize the contribution of Chris to Imsembe. I think it was fundamental.
Yeah.
But I think he helped to empower the people around him, and so in that way, what the good work he began will be continued.
What would you say would be your fondest memories of Chris? We spoke to lots of things. I mean, you had a high admiration of this man, and but maybe some things stand out in your mind.
Yes, well, you know, when I was a young student, I'd also been thinking about the priesthood. And a person like Chris was definitely a strong role model for me because of his option for the poor and with the poor. He lived in Piri, he lived with the community. And in fact, I did my own research by sitting in with Chris, visiting some of the small Christian communities he worked with, and seeing how he was able to actually cross over, you know, in terms of his own childhood as a white male growing up in Robertsham, to being able to actually cross over to a black community where he learned the language, where he loved the people, where he served the people as a priest. It was definitely an inspiration to many of us who were in YCS at the time.
Well, there it is, a great man, a great friend. And I'm sure there are many oblate priests who look back with great appreciation to what they learned from him.
You know, one of the things I must say, Emma, is that Chris never stopped praying. Right. He was a great believer in prayer. And every morning at Incendi, he would start off his classes with meditation. He would read the scriptures. He was somebody who just loved Jesus.
Right.
And tried his best to follow Jesus. He wasn't by no means a perfect person. He's very upset if anybody criticized his training. He's very human in that way, but he was such a loving man.
Yes.
Such a loving man.
Yes. I know he was also part of the contemplative book club that Father Albert started.
Yes. He would certainly make that a priority in his life because he loved Father Albert. He felt the need to continue grappling with the realities that the world is throwing up. And in that way, reading, you know, what were the most recent theological inputs, and from that, reflecting a little bit on how it changed and challenged our perspective. He was somebody who was very open to young people and to listening to what kind of challenges they were facing and how things, how we needed as older people to adapt our perspective and to see what God was saying to us through young people.
Peter, I'm talking to Peter Sadie about the late Chris Langefeldt, who died on Friday last week. What did I say?
He died on Thursday night.
Thursday night, I beg your pardon, Thursday. One of the things, I knew
on
Chris.
On All Souls Day, and I think that's a significant thing.
On All Souls Day,
God called him back.
Absolutely, there it is, yes. Well, you know, Peter, when I hear you talking about Chris like this, I mean, I knew Chris for many years, but I never knew him as closely and intimately as you knew him. And when I hear you speaking about him now, I say to myself, wow, why didn't I get to know this man better? And he seems to have been such a gift to so many people, to his Oblate brothers and to the people with whom he lived and worked. So I want to thank you very, very much just for holding his hand, working with him for so many years in helping people, very especially the poor. And I think surely you appreciate this too, and that it's been a privilege for you to be so closely associated with this great man, Chris Langefeldt.
I think God sends us angels, Emma, and I think the important thing we need to do is to be open to listening and learning from all the angels God sends us. And certainly Chris was a very, very good messenger of God.
Well, there we go. Peter, you know, time is against us. Anything more you want to share with us? I mean, I'm so glad you've opened your heart and shared with us so deeply about Chris. Anything more you'd like to say?
Yes, I think those people who had known Chris are very welcome to join us on Friday morning at St. Michael's Anglican Church in Belfast and Park. The actual service will begin at 11 o'clock, but eulogy will begin at 10 o'clock because there are many friends of Chris over the years who would like to have something to say before the service actually begins.
Okay.
Some words of farewell.
Right.
If there are any fellow priests, colleagues, friends who want to say goodbye to Chris, this would be a wonderful opportunity to send him off in a good spirit.
Well, that's on Friday morning, then starting at 10 o'clock at the church. Where is it again? Welterfriedenpark.
St. Michael's Anglican Church in Welterfriedenpark.
Very good. Well, Peter, thank you so much indeed for giving us time and for sharing with us about this great man, Chris Langefeld. He'll certainly be very, very missed, very much missed by people at Insimbi, but also by people like myself and Albert and others who knew him for so many, many years, who had a really important part, challenging part, to play in the new dispensation in our country. I shall always remember him as a very caring, loving person.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Emil.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter. Go well. Okay. God bless you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Our sympathies to Barbara.
Yes, we will pass that on. Thank you
very much indeed. Right, the time 5 minutes to 9 on Radio Veritas. That was Peter Sadie, whom I've known since he was at school, talking about another person that we've known for many years, Chris Langefeld, who was a Catholic priest at one stage, and he suddenly died on Thursday evening of an embolism. So let's keep him in our prayers and ask the Lord to show him love, mercy, and to welcome him into that place specially prepared for him.